one might have even more baggage because now this you have it, and they might have it. So now you're dealing with multitudes, more problems than you were in the first relationship. And if you think that one was hard, I can pretty much tell you from experience, the next one just gets way harder until everything just crashes and you have to kind of beat yourself up and get some changes going anyways. And that's what actually ends up happening. So I just am really excited that it's finally in the book and we're getting it out there. And does anybody remember what our challenge was last week? Or whatever week that was? I can tell you what, let's see. That was five.
Do not magnify your partner's faults, learn to be happily different.
Oh, yeah.
Happily married, is that one of them?
Yeah, that's kind of easy. Learning to be happily different, it just happens, right? But isn't it nice when you give up responsibility for being the person that needs to change your husband? To me, that was the biggest eye-opener. Yes. That's why we start out with it. That's why it's so awesome. When you're not the one who's, you know, making your husband follow you, that is life-changing to me. It's just such a relief. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm not going to agree with everything he does, you know, but that's okay. And I get the whole package. And I've actually said that to people. I'm like, yeah, I get the whole package. So, you know, that's just the way he is.
Well, it's like that quote you put in there from that Zig Ziglar about marrying the right person. And, you know, maybe he's not the right one, but if you treat him like he's... Like, that really stuck with me. Like, okay, well, even if Josh wasn't, you know, supposed to be the one, if I treat him that way, it actually makes a difference, you know, in the house and stuff with the little things, you know.
And don't you like that if you treat the right one like the wrong one, he'll become the wrong one?
Right. It was really good. I liked that.
I like that quote a lot. It's hard to find that quote.
I think I found the other challenge. What two things are good and what two things can you work on?
Oh, yeah. Did you ask? You asked. Did anybody ask their spouse? It's a brave step. Anybody ask your spouse two good things?
We've done it before, though.
Yeah? And was it good? Did you?
Yeah. He always looks at me with this, like, look, like, do you really want me to tell you? Or... Is it a safe place to be able to say something?
Right.
I'm like, yes, just tell me.
You want to know.
It's funny, though, because I know, I'm very aware of what my problem is.
Right.
It's just me changing myself. Right. I'm very aware of it, so I'm, you know, confirming what it is, you know.
Again, it's like when I hit the bot, I'm like, I know what I did. I know why the ball's going over there.
Right.
You know, but the fact of the matter that you know, you've got to get your mind in the game.
Right.
And think about it, so it goes the right place and accomplishes something. So I think this has just been really powerful. Mm-hmm. But we're going to start with changing as a work of heart. And I don't like change. I'm really, you go to church, right? I always had my row, right, Christine? Somebody took my row. I was so discombobulated. But I just, you know, I started to realize that if we don't love change, we're not picking the fear of God. We got to change. Mm-hmm. And we got to change to get better. And really, if you really want a relationship that's going to get better and better, you have to keep changing. Because things change. And you have to change to adapt to different challenges. And I don't say troubles. I honestly look at them as challenges. Because we're, you know, it's just like when you're raising kids. I determined really early that I was never going to wish them out of any stage because you're just wishing them into another set of problems anyways. And then they're gone, you know. So I said, I'm going to just soak up everything because every age, every stage has its challenges. And you know why? And it's hard, but you have to work through them to make each stage that you can appreciate. Because you know what? If you want to enjoy your life, you have to enjoy it all the way through. So you have to purpose to do that. It doesn't happen by accident. You have to work really hard at it. But I like what Reinhard Niebuhr said. He said, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And sometimes it does take courage to change the things that you can. And sometimes it takes humility. And sometimes it takes like laying down your pride, giving up your rights. You know, and that's why I just really rely on the strength of God a lot of times because there's some things that I just think it would be very difficult to do on my own if I didn't have the bigger picture. But I do have a bigger picture And I will tell you something. There's laws that are operative, just like the law of gravity. You know, that what goes up, it's going to come down. There's laws that are scripturally sound. I don't care if you believe in the Bible. It was really cool. I had a girl that doesn't believe in God read my book and do a review on it. And she's like, you know, it's really got a lot of scripture in here. But she was like, everything makes sense. She says, even though I don't really believe in God, all the Bible verses that she quoted, was, you know, right in the review, she said made sense and were directed at principles. She said she won me over because it all made sense, perfect sense. And she said, I would highly recommend this book, not just for marriages, but for any relationships. Because really, that's what it is. It's principles. Mm-hmm. There's laws that are in operation. I don't care who you are. If you give, it comes back to you. Mm-hmm. You know? And it is better to give than receive. Look at the people who receive. Look at the people who are givers. I don't care what walks of life they're in. It just is a law. So there's just certain laws, you know, that what you reap, you're going to sow. You know, and one of my favorites was during the early child, you know, raising years, unless a corn of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it'll bear much fruit. You know, when you give up your life, you often find it. You'll hear that over and over from people. Well, hold on to our rights. We have a right to this. We have a right to this. But when you really learn to give things up, a lot of times you can really find a lot of meaning in your life and what your life stands for. So there's just a lot of those things that I just love. But change takes courage. It's difficult. You have to live outside of your comfort zone. And honestly, if we've looked at anything over and over for these 8 weeks, we do look at being comfortable, being uncomfortable. Because if you can't do that, you're not going to be very effective in a funeral, in an awkward situation. A lot of our lives have very awkward situations. You know, you're going in, someone's terminally ill, you know, you're going into a funeral home where someone unexpectedly died, you know, or someone in your family is going through incredible hardship. If you don't learn to step out and be uncomfortable, you're really not going to be very effective. You're going to live a life kind of like that vase or something, you know, like that little decoration. You might decorate something, but you're not going to add value and meaning. You have to learn to step out and say something. And honestly, I would rather say something really awkward than not say anything. Because I've had friends that walked through their 7-year-olds dying, you know, right alongside my kids' friends. I've had 2 friends that actually walked through that, one of which I had to do the eulogy, which was horrible. And the daughter, her daughter was the same name as my daughter, and they were friends. So it was just, and it's very horrible, and you don't know what to say. But so many times, if you step out and say something, it will be a lifeline to people. You don't even know. So you know what I used to do, actually? I used to take my kids to funeral homes, and I used to say, because I had to do it, I'm a babysitter, Charlton. And I figured, you know, as long as they were well-behaved, which they weren't always, but it was a process. But I would tell them to say, you know, I'm really sorry about your loss. And I would teach them to be comfortable saying things like that. We have to learn to say those things, you know. And so many times later, it will come back and it will be something that you've given to somebody that they can really hold on to. We're going to talk later in the lesson, but I'll just tell you now because we're on it. But Marlo Thomas, and I know I've mentioned this a lot, but she wrote 2 books called Words to Live By. And I think they're really challenging for me because it's just, the first book is about people that are kind of famous and well-known, and some people that aren't so famous. But they're just like people that were walking through life and somebody gave them a sentence or two that they hung on and it totally changed the direction of their life. Now, the best thing I got out of those 2 books, I didn't even read them all the way through. I just picked out certain things and read them. The best thing I got out of it, and the second one was just stories from people that wrote in after the first book and then that had those same things. It just makes me realize that there are times when people say something to me that I can grab onto that can totally rock my world. And so it makes me more aware of what people are saying to me because I want to find out those sentences and even pull them out of people sometimes that maybe, you know, with asking their advice or asking them the right questions when I'm utilizing my minutes, I want to maximize my moments. I don't want to sit and talk to you and have it not mean anything. So if I'm at a party or I'm going to like a lot of Thanksgiving, you got Thanksgiving coming up, you got Christmas coming up. If you're going to those things and you're going to be sitting with your family, some of which you're excited about, sometimes people aren't that excited about it. But you know what? You want to make it count for something. So find a few questions and plan ahead of some things that you could ask your grandparents or your parents, things that you can make them feel special. Everyone's stressed out. Maybe you can pull something from somebody that maybe helps them to get through situations or that maybe they've gone through in their life. And people are such a treasure house of information. But if you don't pull greatness from people, they'll just leave it sitting inside of them a lot of times and won't volunteer it. And a lot of the reasons why, we're going to find out later about communication, people just don't communicate. But you can pull things from people that can really enhance your life. Like people in your family that have gone through crazy stuff or people that have different perspectives. Now, some of it you're going to have to filter through. But the other thing is you can put into people's lives. You can go up to people and your friends' kids or your nieces and nephews that are in the age where all their friends are cutting themselves or they're lacking purpose, they're lacking identity. They maybe have parents, you know. You can go up to people and you can put things into their life that can totally change the course of their future. That is a powerful thing that you're going to these holidays and stuff with. So not only do we learn to feel a little awkward with our husband saying things that we don't normally say and asking them for things that we don't normally ask them, but you know what? Carry it over to other people too, because your life it can make so much more of a difference. You know, and then when people come up to you and you start doing that, they can say, you know, I remember what you told me. You know, I mean, there were times that my daughter wanted to quit dental school, and I just, you know what, Hannah? This is something that you have a vision for. Yeah, it's going to be tough. You can hunker down and work for you, but if this is something you really don't think you want to do, no one's going to be mad if you just drop it. But, you know, and having that freedom, I think, just gave her the courage to keep going. But there were different things at different times that, you know, that she was getting assaulted for her faith and things that we were able to say, little sentences. So don't never underestimate the value of a sentence. Mm-hmm. That's all I want to say. It can be something good that you're putting in to your husband when he's having a hard day. You know, like today my husband is running around trying to get all this stuff done. And he's in gym. He's like, oh, just go to bed. So, you know, he's on FaceTime, you know. So I'm just trying to smile into the phone and pause everything I'm doing. I'm going, okay, I gotta go. But, you know, just because I know that it's the only time he's going to see my face. I want it to be good when he's going to sleep that, you know, he doesn't see me running around, cutting him off. You know what I mean? So we got to really work on what we're putting out there. And I just think it's so, so, so powerful. You hear so much come back. And you're going to, you know, find that a lot of people are probably doing it now. I used to remember going to people that were sick, and I was thinking, people are so awkward. Like, my uncle was dying of cancer, and everybody's like, okay, you're going to get up again, and we're just going to bet those lottery tickets one more time. The guy is obviously never getting up again, okay? Like, so you need to come up with something. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's looking at them, and you know he knows he's not getting up again. So it's like so awkward. So there's nothing you can do to be more awkward than that. So you can just step out, you know. And I just, you know, you could be awkward, you know. Like when my grandpa was dying, I didn't know what to say to him. And I said, you know what? You've trusted God for your whole life. And you know what? You believed in God. I know it. I see stuff in your house. This was not even my grandpa. It was my husband's grandpa. You know, and I said, but you know what? You have to accept what he did for you. And he said, how do you know? And I said, because he listened to my heart. And I said, do you want to pray? And he did. But, you know, you have to learn to be awkward. Mm-hmm. People that were at Gilda's Club dying of cancer, 22 years old, 17 years old, 8 years old, 40, you know, all the way through. You have to know stuff to say to them. Because if you don't say something to them, people avoid awkward situations like a plague. Mm-hmm. And everyone acts like they are not even there. Mm-hmm. And it is so sad. I push myself. Like if I see somebody, I see parents walking a lot with their children that are grown up in wheelchairs and stuff. And I'll say to them, I'll go, look at you guys. I can find myself complaining about just getting here. Like, you just take away all my excuses. I just applaud you. You guys are the heroes. And I've had people, like, break down and start crying. Mm-hmm. Like, literally. And I taught my kids, too, if they're at the beach, to go up to the kid that's limping around with MS and say, wow, look at you. You're just doing such a good job. Something. I just think it's so important that we learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable. I think we have to learn to step out and say stuff because you don't even realize how much people need it and how many people aren't doing it. And so really just be awkward. Sometimes you'll go away and you go, oh my gosh, it sounds so stupid, but whatever. You know, at least you said something, right? Hi. Come on in. Grab a seat. And there's seats over here, too, if you want to grab one. But, you know, we're going to use the acrostic work of heart to look at some of the ways that we can change. We can walk the talk. You can't give what you don't have. If you're out of something, you need to go get it. You know, if you find yourself that you're out of love, you got to get some love for the guy. If you find you're out of patience with your kids, you got to find a way to get patience. And, you know, those are very ethereal terms, but they sound like they're so up there somewhere. But you know what? Those things that you can't see, you can really see. You can see if someone's patient. You can see if someone's loving, right? Like, you can see those things louder than, I mean, you know. So you just have to know that you can. You know, I always see a lot of women, and women get... I've seen so many women, we're so dedicated to, you know, we get our roots touched up, we get this, we get, you know, clothes, we get this. And so many times, the thing that we're not building or working on is the spiritual part of us that can't be seen. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That is the most important part. Mm-hmm. That's, first of all, the part that's going to last for eternity. That's the part that's going to bring you through trials. That's like the inner strength that you have. You know, we're talking about core strength, and we want to, you know, lift our weights, and we want to do this, and try to, you know, look good. But you know what? We don't work enough on who we are inside. Our spirit man's going to be for eternity. That really hits me, too, because I love to work out. But you know what? It says physical exercise profits a little, but godly exercise profitable for now and for eternity. That is what's going to help us to get old with confidence, that we don't have to, like, hold on to our beauty or try to hold on to the way we looked or the way we felt or hold on to material possessions that, you know, and that's going to help us to keep things in the right perspective. So all I'm going to say is, I'm not saying that don't work out on who you are, what you look like, or work out with about who you are socially and have get-togethers. All I'm saying is make sure that you are taking a nice chunk of your day to work out on who you are spiritually. Because that's going to stand the test of time. And those things that you can't see, just like the love, just like the patience, those are going to be the things that you see the most in somebody's life. And you know what? We want to work on those things. There's a way that you can be patient. You know, I mean, you can grab a Bible, do a word study. You can find out, you know, patience is... it's the absence of negative emotions. That's peace with patience. Because in peace and patience, you inherit your souls. But in patience, it's waiting for the end of the thing and having confidence that you will get to that thing. And seriously, some of this stuff is not ever going to happen unless you take time to step back and reflect and to, you know, look at it and to see what you need. And to see what to do. So really, work on the things that are not seen. You know what? God chose a picture to describe our role in life. And you know what? It's a battlefield. It is a battlefield, isn't it? Don't you battle for your sanity sometimes? Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously. You battle to know when to say yes. You battle to know when you should say no. You're battling to take your priorities and live them out. You're battling to try to love your husband or to have patience with your kids when they're really testing you. You know, I just talked to somebody this week. She raised her kids, and all of her kids got older, and she's just given one heartbreak after the other with her adult kids. It's just so sad and so hard. Life is not easy. It is a battle. So if you feel like you're in the battle, then guess what? Things aren't weird for you. You have a handle on what life is. It's hard, and it is a battle. We are soldiers. That's why it says, fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternity for it that you confessed. You know, a lot of times people don't realize, they don't feel like they're in a battle. They don't feel like they're winning. They don't feel like they're victorious. Maybe everything seems against you. You know, sometimes there's not one person that you feel can really understand you. But I will tell you, I have been in so many positions and so many times in my life where God is the only one that really can understand me. And you know what? The one who made you, he knows you inside and out. You can't hide from him. He knows you're not all that, you know, and that's okay with him. Don't you know your kids aren't all that? Like, that's okay with you, isn't it? Like, you are okay with that. You're patient with your kids. God is so patient with us. And he can help us get through situations and things with more love and more peace and more patience and more sound mind than you can ever do it alone. So you know what? When you're going through those hard times, don't go through it alone. You know, God sent Jesus to die for our sins so we could have a relationship with him so we never have to be alone. You're never going through those things alone. And God can give you so much help. And I just encourage you to spend some time on who you are spiritually. Because you know what? In the end, when we look good, it's not going to matter at all. You know, my sister, she died very unexpectedly, 50 years old, beautiful. My little sister, you never saw anybody with so much life in her. You know, and she's just so gorgeous. Then she was just laughing on the four-wheeler in front of me 1 minute, and the next minute she hit eternity, just like that. And right in front of me, my little sister, I just protected her my whole life. And you know what? I'll tell you something. The thing that just anchors my soul in a tempest of waves is just knowing that for the 3 months prior to that time, she lost everything she had. What she didn't lose, she gave away. And you know what? She told me she finally started getting her life where she was paying attention to that spiritual part of her. And she said, I am learning so much about God. You know, and how much he loves me. First, she had messed up her life, and she didn't think God could deal with all of her mess ups. She thought her mess ups kind of just turned his eyes away from her. And some people didn't understand her, so she just felt no way could God accept who she was because of how she messed up. That's so not true. And she started getting a hold of it, and those last few months, she's like, I'm an official Jesus right now. You know, I've never been happier. There's a time for everything. She taught me all these things, and you know what? That, it just anchors myself. Because you know what? She knew who she was, and she knew where she's going. To me, you know what? I have no need of any further proof that this life isn't all there is. I already know that. So it's just for me, I have such a confidence in knowing that she had addressed the most important part of her life before she died. And yet there's so many of us that life just crowds out that time with us. And we don't get to do that. And oh my goodness, I was so happy that my husband was so busy. I was like, having so much fun. Me and God up north, I mean, in Florida, we just having so much fun. But when you really take some time, there is a well of just everything you need. There is a wealth of information and knowledge and wisdom in the Bible that you can apply to your life, and it can help you so much spiritually. So don't let the day push all that out, you know? And when you walk upon, here's what God says in his word. God bless you. First of all, his divine nature becomes yours as his child. Your sins are forgiven. You're a new creation. His truth sets you free. You have peace. You can have trials, but you're an overcomer and even more than a conqueror. You can do all things through him, and he strengthens and equips you. You can be part of his army and be strong and courageous because someone greater is on your side. He will help you fight your battles. And I love what the message says. God says, they're mine, all mine. They'll get special treatment when I go into action. I treat them with the same consideration and kindness that parents give the child who honors them. And know that Jesus, he has the last word on everything and everyone, from angels to armies. He's standing alongside God, and what he said goes. Because of his power in us and at work in us, he will do super abundantly above, far over and above all that we dare ask or think. He will do infinitely beyond your highest prayers, desires, thoughts, hopes, or dreams. I mean, do you want to say no thanks to that? I don't. You know? So, I mean, accepting his forgiveness and receiving his love and having a personal relationship is the biggest thing you'll ever do in your life. So, we need tools, though, to build strong marriages and other relationships. And our tools do include a lot of those things that you can't see, but are the strongest things of all. Humility, forgiveness, patience, self-restraint. You know, those are the things we need for good relationships. And when a builder doesn't have something and needs a tool, he doesn't just, like, abandon the project. So if you need something in your marriage, if you need something in another relationship, you don't just abandon the relationship because you don't have the tools. You go find out how to get the tools. Then, like I said, there's a wealth of information. There's people that you can come alongside and draw from, like we were talking about. There's things that can change and rock your world. There's things that you can set back. And we're going to learn about how we can look and find some of those tools that can get us through the situations we have to get through. Now,
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I thought we were in chapter 7 and 8. Are we on 9 and 10?
Yeah, I thought we were on 9 and 10.
Because on November 4th, we're on 7 and 8 in here. Does that mean we're done with 7 and 8?
Yeah. November 4th is 7 and 8. Oh, wait. Did we? November 4th, 7 and 8. Oh, well, we're going to do 9 and 10, and then we'll do 7 and 8 next time. 11. Oh, I thought we were on 6 today.
We did that last week, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So should we be on 7 and 8?
Oh, no. I thought it was week 6 today. That's week 6 next week. Well, we'll flop back. How's that?
Okay, I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, thanks for telling me, because we'll flop back next week. When I was reviewing out the lesson, I thought that we were on week number 6, but we're really on week number 5. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So where are we right now?
Well, we are right now on page 167.
Thank you.
I was lost, too. I wasn't looking for all of
it. Because chapter 8 says changes, too, but you're not talking about those changes.
Yeah, thanks. So I'll go back, though. Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right, but also, you want to picture, you have to demonstrate the attributes that you want to pass on to your kids, too, and that is easier to say. So, really, if you're teaching a child not to be angry or to be patient, you can't say, you know, don't be so mad at them. You know, that's not going to teach your kids anything. Like, you know, you have to say, see what I do when I'm angry, when I don't get my way, when things don't get my way? Look at what I do, you know? And you've got to be able to have it before you can give it. So I think that having kids is the most character-changing thing that you can ever do, because first of all, now you're really responsible. So you cannot teach them one thing and do another thing. So no matter what, whether you're leading a group or not, there you are leading your group, right? So you really have to make sure that you see where your kids are dealing with, and then you go to some really good sources how to find answers so that you can deal with it effectively in your life. And then you can go share that with your kids. A lot of times, though, I really find a lot of times the weakness, of course, I have a lot of kids, so of course, it's all bound to happen. But I think a lot of times the things that your kids deal with are a lot of the same things that you deal with. So it's so important that you get victory and that you become an overcomer so that you can teach your kids how to get the victory in those areas too. I really believe that I always was a word picture person, so I always pictured a toolbox at the end of each one of my kids' beds. And while I was handling situations in front of them, I was like giving them tools that they could take out of the house when they went, and those tools could help them build strong relationships. That's just the way it works, you know. So that's just a powerful thing to keep you accountable. But, you know, this week you will find out if you have the right tools, because there will be a lot of things that come across each one of our paths to show us what we need. I mean, that's what relationships are about. You know, that's what your days are about. Your days will quickly show you what tools that you're lacking. And that doesn't mean that you abandon the project. It means that you go get what you need, because you can, because we're going from glory to glory. You can get better. I'm going to tell you something. I've watched grandparents. I've watched my mom. My mom's still learning and still challenging. Your mother-in-law still coming to this class. Hopefully she's applying some of that, you know. But you know what? You never, you know, have to stop working on who you are. That's what's exciting about it. And you know what? The most beautiful people are the people that aren't settling in. This is just the way I am, right? They are working on it. And that's why we can, you know, I can tell you, like, it's just beautiful to see, you know. Also, we talked a little bit about outward versus inward. But in the book of Samuel, the prophet Samuel was looking for a king, and he gathered all David, or Saul, who was it? What was his name? Jesse. How'd I forget that? That's my son's name. Okay. Anyways, Jesse, was it closest right here? Anyways, Jesse gathered all of his sons together, and there was one missing, and Samuel looked at all these, and he's going, nope, it's not him. It's not this tall, this one, this accomplished one. He said, well, I just have one other guy in the, you know, fields, you know, watching sheep. He's this young redhead, you know. I wouldn't think about him being the next leader of it, you know, Israel. But it was him. Because in Samson, Samuel said, God looks at the heart. Man looks at the outward appearance. God looks at the heart. And that's why it's so important to say, God, check me and know my heart. See what's in my heart. See what's really moving me. Because you know what? God can see our heart clearly. Sometimes we don't even know our own heart. And then we start not getting our own way. And then all of a sudden you can kind of see where your heart's at, you know, a lot of times. But it's really important to pay attention to where your heart is at, you know, because it can really trick you. And you have to really look at your heart. But that's what God looks at. Also, you know, and that's, I had really, really good parents. Because I was a very horrible teenager. And, you know, my parents always looked at me with my potential. They didn't always look at me for what I was doing. They always saw the potential in me. And I learned from the way that my parents really handled me, I learned how much God loves me and sees me, my potential, as part of who I am too. And that equipped me to raise my kids. And I'm so grateful to be able to acknowledge their potential as part of who they are. Because a lot of times you can get clouded by what's going on in their lives or short-sighted with, you know, the immediate stuff that you're seeing, you know. And that will preclude us from being able to be a part of them getting to achieve their potential if they feel that we are, you know, giving up on them. And so it's really, and that's just the way it is with our marriages too. Like, your husband's potential is a big part of who he is. Do you know, like, if you started looking at what you and your husband could do when you are together and united in purpose and united in heart and united together, like, it's powerful. And that's why the devil's so against marriages, strong marriages. But I think that you have to start to look at people and see their potential. And then that is kind of exciting because we're learning so many tools that we can actually be a part of pulling out the best of them too. And especially if you get good at not bringing out the worst in them all the time, then you can be a conduit for change to pull out what's really good in people. You know, and I think it's easier to, you might see it quicker with kids, you know what I mean? Is you may not see it as fast with your husband, and especially because your role is different with your husband. You know, you're not in charge of your husband like you are with your kids. So you, a lot of times you'll see the effects faster with your kids. But, you know, these are principles that really do work. When you see your kids' potential and you start saying, you know what, I know you know in your heart you're created for more than that. Like, you know. And so I just want to see you living up to your destiny. I want to see you living like 100% the best you can be. And you know what? I know you're not going to be happy if you're living under that level. Like, you can pull greatness from your kids. You can pull them to be comfortable with being uncomfortable where they can stand up and maybe start talking to a crowd or, like, say, make a difference in your school. Like, you can make a difference. When you go to school, like, they're not going to, it's not going to be the same without you there. You know, and you can be a difference in your husband, too. Like, seriously, my husband counts on me. He was going to handle a situation just even a few weeks ago, and he said, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. And I just said, you could never do that because you are such a man of integrity. Like, this is probably going to be one of your last jobs, if not your last job. So you're going to end it with the reputation you have, and you're going to end up serving this guy because his boss is so hard to serve, and everybody's having such a hard time with him. But my husband, I always tell him, I said, you know, whatever you say is going to get back to him because people will want to, you know, brown nose up to him and say that you said stuff. So make sure that anything you say about him is so good that everything he's hearing, that you are just about serving him. And he's, now he's got the thing where he'll tell the people, look, I'm not here to discuss how he behaves or anything like that. He's our boss. We're here to serve him. Let's get this job done. You know, but seriously, it gets hard for our husbands, too. They don't have anyone to talk to, you know, except you are supposed to be kind of like the angel on their shoulder. You know, they kind of count on you. And, you know, Nessa didn't say too much. You know, but then later he told me, he goes, thank you for telling me that. I really have to remember that, and that really helps me. So there might be things that you can say to your husband, and that's, again, those words to live by. You know, sometimes if you pay attention to the words you're saying, you'll know which words are going to be those words to live by as you're saying them. You know? You know, it could be something little. Yeah, it doesn't have to be something big. That's why sometimes people say, I don't have an inroad with my teenager, or my husband won't even let me talk to him. I said, just say a sentence. It doesn't take a big diatribe. All you have to do is say one sentence. Go on, I know you're going to kill it. You know, go on, spread joy like peanut butter, thick, you know, or just whatever you say. It only has to be one little sentence, you know. Boy, honey, if you do your job today and as good as you look, you're going to be okay. You know? But just something little that they can take out with them in their day. How many times have you left somebody and the last thing they said to you is in your ear all day? Think about it. Especially, you can get in a habit where you're saying something as people are leaving or coming that's going to stick in their ear. You're going to know what those things are going to be. And, you know, hopefully they're going, you know, the good things. We don't want to say those bad things because those bad things will stick in your ear too, you know. Mm-hmm. And so many times, don't ever, ever, ever send your family out the door with that word that's just going to echo. It's just so dangerous because they don't hear it once. They hear it 100 times, you know, and it's so bad. So, but we can be inspired by people's belief in us. My mom used to always say, I know you'll make the right choice. I used to get so mad at that. You know? I used to get so mad at that. No, I'm not going to make the right choice. I don't want to even make the right choice. But that would just ring in my ears. You know? And seriously, we were not making the right choice. I was with a bunch of friends. We were actually down on Gratiot going to the wrong place, you know, getting a mischief, you know, me and all my girlfriends. So we're running around outside of the car. Don't even ask me why. And all of a sudden, I see this airplane go by. It was dark. I said, Jesus loves you. I said, you know what? Just take me home. You know? Really? Now you got the airplane out after me. But seriously, sometimes those words that just, they go out with you, you know? And even if I don't make all the right choices, she believed in me.
I have a funny story. I was at work with my friend one time, and I've known her probably now about 9 years because of working with her, and she's a Christian also, but we were sitting there, and we were having a disagreement, pretty good disagreement, and all of a sudden, a nun walked by, and we both looked at each other and went, we're in trouble. And we knew immediately that we had to stop, and we apologized, and it was just hilarious, because like literally we're in the Renaissance Center and a nun out of nowhere walked.
Isn't that funny? It's so good, isn't
it?
It's
so funny.
I'm telling you, that is really, and that's good, and that's what we can actually be a perspective of, you know what I mean, if we can be that to each other too. But also, by the way, if you have little kids, teach them to know their heart, you know, and actually even with your husband, encourage him to know his heart. Just say, you know what, you are a good man. Like, I know that you don't feel good when this situation is like this. You are too good to feel good about doing this or being that way. You know, appeal to people's heart, you know, especially as you start to work on, like, as we spend more time working on the things that you can't see, you're more aware of. You know what I mean? So then it's like when my kids were little and they hurt each other or do something, you know, I go, you can't have a happy heart when you just did that to him. See, now your heart is not happy. Like, so when they're really little, it's nice to teach them to listen to their heart, how their heart feels, you know?
That's good.
You know, so let's make this right. And now don't you have a happy heart again? Don't you feel really good? So you teach them, you know what I mean? Like after we would leave somewhere, I'd go, you're so happy, we could have done something ourselves and we went and made their day happy. How's your heart feel? Isn't it your heart feel happy? So you teach people, and we have to learn to hear our heart too, you know? But I love this this picture I put in my book. It says, all I need is someone to say, I believe in you. It's a hand holding out. And so I like to pretend that everyone in your path this next week, we're going to get together next week, so it's not a break, so that's nice. But everyone, you don't have to do this for a long time, just a week. No, you should keep doing it. But, you know, just reach out, like everyone's holding their hand out. All I need is someone to say, I believe in you. And believe in people. Believe in people. It would change people if they know someone believes in them. People don't believe in anybody. So why don't you remind your spouse of his successes and cheer him on despite his weaknesses? Do you know how beat down guys get at work? Oh, my God, it's so sad. But you can become inspiration to your husband. And the one, you know, you can become his biggest cheerleader. I like the scripture says, words kill, words give life. They're either poison or fruit. You choose. You choose. You're going to say words that are either going to kill or bring life. And you're going to know it right while you're saying it. And that's why we have the first week we learn to shut up right while we're saying it, because you can. So that's powerful. Also, you can, by inspiring your husband, he can do more than it's even possible. You can make someone live beyond their what they're at just by you believing in them. I know I run, when I used to run races, I could run like so far. But when you line the street with people cheering you on, you are not going to drag your feet. You aren't going to just, oh, you know, here you're coming up to the crowd, you know. You're not going to be like, you know, have your tongue hanging out and look ridiculous, you know. So the thing is you can do a lot more when you're encouraged and cheered on. You know what I mean? You can pick it up. And just, we want to be our husband's cheerleader because they don't have them. I can promise you they don't give me at work. Very rarely does someone work in an environment. I mean, maybe at Starbucks. I don't know. But, you know, but think of the people who believed in you. Like, did you have someone that believed in you? Like, really saw potential in you? And just think of that effect it has in your life, you know? It's just really powerful. And if you haven't had someone, that's even more reason. You got to go out and find 3 or 4 people then, because you got to really make up for it. We want to believe in people. It's just really important. Focusing on the best in people, especially your husband, will help him see his potential. Capture a vision. Step out to do something you might not feel confident to do or see the possibility. Mediocre lives are lived by those who don't believe that they have what it takes to live an extraordinary life. And I can tell you something. Every single one of us has the potential to live a life that's not ordinary. You know, and, you know, I just have so much respect for my parents because both of them came from the most horrific circumstances that you could ever be raised in. Both of them. I mean, my dad's dad died when he was little and killed by somebody. They raised by a single mom in the dregs of Detroit. I mean, you know, my mom, her stepfather used to come and throw boiling water on them and beat her mom up in front of her and take all my mom's pictures and stab them all and, you know, wreck them all because he couldn't stand the sight of my mom because she was from a different dad. And, you know, and their mom had to do the dime a dance, you know. They got stories that would just curdle your blood. And I just want to say that my parents were the most amazing parents, you know, and they gave us so much because they rose up out of that. So I really don't look at, like, obstacles. I think that we have to realize that there's some things that we've been dealt with that suck. I mean, sorry. There's some people's lives that really haven't had great, you know, opportunities at first. But you know what you can do? Rather than using that as an excuse to stay there, you use it as a reason to change it. And that's what I love. And that is so empowering. And you can help people that have had lives that had bad, hard starts. You can say, look, don't use it as an excuse. Use it as a reason. You can change it. You know, we have to tell people and help them to believe in themselves that they can live extraordinary lives. And you know where it's going to start? With your husband and your kids. You know, they don't have to just be ordinary. And you know what? And when I say not ordinary, I'm not talking about, you know, that he has to be famous or, you know, or do this or travel or, you know, be the head of something. I'm just talking about having a functional life where he knows he's valuable, where he knows he's important. You know, sometimes we're always looking for that great, oh, I want to be this great ministry. I should be in charge of this great thing. But you know what? Maybe there's a neighbor right next door to you that needs a, you know, encouragement that you could bring over a tray of Christmas cookies, and maybe it might be the only person that cares about her. Sometimes we're looking for this great stuff, and you know, Jesus really wasn't about the great stuff. He was really a lot about the one-on-ones. And honestly, sometimes even the people at Gilda's Club that did die really extremely young, I learned so much from them. Because you know what? Sometimes it wasn't how big their life was. It was just how effective their life was. Right here. You know? It wasn't like hugely impactful. But the people that they impacted were impacted. So I think, you know, that kind of helps you. But you want to make sure that the people in your life have been loved enough. That Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood, I saw it because I love that one actress. What's her name? Sandra Bullock. And the movie was kind of dumb. But I will say, trying to pull out good from stuff, sitting there for 2.5 hours with my friend, I did pull out one good line from that movie. And she said to her dad, "Have you been loved enough?" And when she said that in the movie, it just stuck me. And I just thought, you know, you know, I always think that my kids, when they got married, I just wanted their spouses to really love them like I loved them. Like, you know, some wake up and their little hair would be up here, and they were so cute with their eyebrow and this and that. You know, and I just, like, thought, you better really love them, you know? Aww. And, you know, and just to think that you're married to someone's son, and has he been loved enough, you know? And has your husband been loved enough? It's only going to come from you. And we have to love the people in our life enough. You know, sometimes they don't have a lot of people around them pouring in love. We want to pour in love. You know, all that other stuff, it really doesn't matter. You're not going to change your husband anyway, so. I mean, you won't. I mean, you might pull out some good things. And I think the best encouragement for anybody to change is that the other person is so wonderful, it's inspiring. You know, I mean, the worst way that anybody changes is by demanding it. I have not really known too many people who change in, you know, including myself, I hate to say it. I mean, sometimes people demand something from me. I almost don't even want to do it anymore. I mean, seriously, I shouldn't admit that, but that's just kind of like my little rebellious nature or something. But I think a lot of times people are so demanding and they want their husband to capitulate to them and they're wondering why nothing's changing. Well, get out of the way. Let the guy be, you know, guy that makes mistakes. Let him see that you're working on who you are and it's going to inspire him, you know? But also being respect and respectable. Respect is showing honor, esteem, deference. It's being considerate. You know, it's just, when you respect your others and yourself, you'll earn the trust of your family. And you know what? Respect for your husband and for your children is reinforced when you show them inside of your home that you have respect for other people. You can't have respect for your husband and your kids when you're not respecting people in general. You have to have respect for people. You can't be talking smack about people and then think that you're going to be respectable to other people. So you don't want to speak negatively about people to other people. You know, we all find ourselves doing it. I mean, we've all been there where we're just, and when you start really paying attention to it, it is really ugly to do that. You know, it's like, why are you hating on someone? Their life is probably hard enough. They really don't need you adding to it. And I've been there, and I get so mad at myself, because when I hear myself doing that, I'm like, my gosh, that's horrible. And I'll just stop right there, you know? And we just have to stop making excuses. People's life's hard enough. They don't need you hating on them, you know? Encourage people. You know, respect people. And don't share people's secrets. Oh, my gosh, my husband in the marriage read. The marriage kind of sharing deep, dark secrets. I mean, guys, especially with your husband. They don't know how to keep a secret. I mean, my goodness, my daughter shared something with my husband. He was, like, announcing it on the world broadcast. Goodness. But that's why you don't tell people secrets. Let them tell their own secrets, good and bad. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, my goodness. Anyways, give impartial advice and consider the other person's viewpoint, too. You know what? A lot of times, I think I've told you before, my kids will get mad at me because they're like, you always take the other person's side. Well, yeah, because you already know your side. So what do I want to feed your side for? You got to feed the other person's side because perspective, he has to be a part of that, right? So a lot of times I'll automatically, you want to tell me a problem? I'll automatically take the other side because you already know your side.
That's right.
And the problem with the impasse and the problem with the face-off that people have that they're trying to work through is because they don't know what the other side is. So if you can even just understand the other side, you don't even have to agree with it. But if you can just know where that other person was coming from, why they said that, their history, their background, the faults that they're working on. I mean, even God himself said if you're crying against your problem that he doesn't, like, hold it to your account, like, as if you weren't crying against it. A lot of people have problems with anger. They're trying to work through it. They might come off a different way, you know? And so you know, you shouldn't be you know, walked over or treated wrong. But then again, you're going to have to give a little allowances while they're working through that stuff. So I just think it's really important to consider where someone else is coming from. Also, give full attention. Showing what concerned people is important to you. I think a lot of times impasses are just because people don't trust that it's for the good of the whole situation. You know, if we're thinking of working on solutions and you're not working on insulting or hurting someone, there's going to be a lot more effective communication and problem solving. So that's what we want to work on. But also have somebody's back. I was actually talking to a young girl, and she was so mad at her mom because, like, years ago in high school, she didn't have her back on some. Somebody called her up, and the mom didn't check with the daughter and was just assuming that the daughter did something that she didn't do, and that daughter just was so wounded. You know, I mean, obviously, I'm trying to help her, you know, work through that. But, I mean, I was, you know, when she was talking to me. But the fact of the matter is, you know, people want to know you have their back. And I will tell you, you know, conversations you think that aren't getting back, they're getting back. Believe me, little birds of the air will come back. Somehow it'll always get back to someone. So I'm just saying, if you are positive and uplifting, and it gets back to people, that's just way better. Anyways. Sometimes it can help people to get through the problems. Some people are really, you know, like this one time I was teaching creative memories, and this girl came into the room, and she was so mean. And, you know, I was just nice, whatever. And then my daughter was helping me, and she said, "How can you be so nice to that lady? She's so mean. You know, she doesn't even like you." I go, "She doesn't know me. She's probably just mean." She doesn't know me, so how can she not like me? I can't take this personal. She's probably just got a mean problem. So, I mean, you know what I mean? It's not my problem. So why would I be mean to her?
Right.
I mean, she doesn't know me. She's not, you know. So, and it was really interesting because that same lady came probably 4 or 5 times. And then to the class, and she was always crabby and everything. Well, she was just like really crabby person. So, and I just didn't take it personally because she didn't know me. She was crabby, so she didn't change even after she knew me. So it wasn't like it was against me. It was just like she was to everybody. So then it was so strange because we were walking through the kitchen, and my daughter was actually there, and the girl came in. She goes, "What is it that you have? You're always so happy." She goes, "I need that." Mm-hmm. Here she is. She's dealing with depression. All the stuff that's going on with her life. You know what? And you know, I got to really help her to get a handle on some things in her life. And she was still kind of always like, you know, was a little bit on the down person side. You know, she's maybe a little pessimistic person. You know, had fed a long time on that. But she really did. She changed a lot, you know, and I got to know her, start laughing and everything. So, you know, sometimes people need who you are, mm-hmm. and they're not being a certain way against you. Sometimes people are going through something or they are carrying something. So we can't retaliate or talk smack about them when sometimes what they might need is a little encouragement or a little bridge rather than, you know, to hear that you join the crowds against them. You know what I mean? So, anyways, I think that kindness is a lost thing. People worry so much what they feed their family, and they're worried about what they're, you know, doing for their kids and how their kids are self-esteem and all this stuff. But yet they poison their kids with their attitudes. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You can poison your kids by thinking that your kids are better than other people or by thinking that someone else has no value to them, or by teaching that people aren't to be valued. You know, it starts early, too. The first thing your kid comes home, you know, so-and-so is mean to me, and they said this and that. The first thing you want to say to protect your little cubs, you know, is don't play with them. You know, well, you just play with, you know, this person or something. But, yeah, that's not going to teach them anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? You have to say, well, you know, you don't have to be after school friends with them because maybe they have different, you know, way that they live, but you have to be school friends with everybody. And you know what? You need to be kind to them back. So, you know, you teach them things that even when they don't agree with someone, they can still learn from someone. They don't have to be after school friends if they're not doing the same thing. But, you know, you have to teach people, you have to teach your kids early to be kind. I mean, and, you know, holding grudges and retaliating, it is like poison ivy. It will get so a hold of your heart, you will hate yourself because you will hear yourself being so ugly and so feeding something. And it's going to be where your mind goes to all the time. You know, even at Christmas, you can go to home, room full of Christmas people, and you can focus on that one person that you have an issue with. And then it can just take your whole joy out of it. And that shouldn't be. You know, I say go after that person, deal with it, and don't let people change who you are. And you know what? And don't talk smack about it. Because what happens is we talk about them. It's like taking little logs and kindling wood. And you have an issue with somebody. And then as you say your words, it says that words are like wood. And where there's no absence of wood, the fire will not go out. But where there's no wood, the fire will go out. If you don't keep feeding something and fueling it, it will die. You know how it lives? You feed it, you fuel it, you rehearse it. There's so many dangerous studies on ruminating. Like if your husband goes to work and you're ruminating and you're thinking, it's like establishing a pattern in your mind. It literally is a rut in your mind. It's like a brain pattern that's established, and your thought will normally go right back to that rut because you've established it by feeding it and going over it so much. The power of what you ruminate on. So you know what? Make sure the things that you're rehearsing in your mind, you know, aren't like, oh, you're a jerk. Oh, I can't stand him. Oh, he's always so blah, 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 whatever. You know, make sure what you are choosing to think about, because it's your thing. I've heard people go, oh, I just pray that God gives me right thoughts. Well, he's not gonna, because he told you to take the right thoughts and put them in your mind and to take the wrong ones and cast them out like a fishing rod, like really far. And put the right thoughts in. So don't pray for God to give you right thoughts. He already told you how to get them. So what you have to do is you have to feed yourself right thoughts. You have to, like, make sure that when you're saying, oh, he didn't mean it. Oh, he, you know, Mrs. Carollo, it's just her way. It's been, you know, it's my mom's really good friend. She's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you could do to her. Nothing bad's going to come out. Because all she ever thought about was good things. She's got so many ruts in her mind. If you stepped on her toe, the only thing that would go into the rut would be like, oh, you probably didn't see it. Don't worry about it. You know, so really, you are what you think, because those thought processes really do ingrain into your brain. That's why you can't feed those negative things. They'll become part of you. And that will be the way you look at everybody. That's why it says that, you know, if by bitterness and unforgiveness, many can be defiled. Because you can be unforgiving to one person, but then many other people are defiled. Because now that's part of your nature, and it's going to affect more people than that. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's so important. We just don't think about it. But when you learn to think about that, I always like to think of my mind being so heated up like a frying pan, where when the wrong thoughts come, they just have to sizzle off, you know? Because let's face it, we all, every single day, this is nothing you could decide today, and then you don't have to re-decide tomorrow. You have to re-decide tomorrow, too. Sometimes moment by moment. You can decide to have all the right thoughts today. Tomorrow, you got to re-decide. Because the thoughts are coming at you at lightning speed. I mean, so, you know, it's just a hard thing you have to always pay attention to. But go the extra mile for the people you love the most. That's why this class is so good. It's like a workout. You get to in these habits. You're like, oh, no, I'm not going there. I'm not getting that rut. You know what I mean? You start to be like, oh, go the extra mile. Okay, I'm not going to. You know, oh, yeah, you can see yourself slapping. And you want something good. So your husband says, you know, your husband like throws his dirty socks there. You're like, oh, here he goes again. But you're going the extra mile. So you're like, honey, I'm putting these dirty socks right in the wash. Not only that, I'm going to do this for you too. You know, you get in these habits that are going to make your life fun and good. If you can. And if you don't, you can be miserable. So you can. I'm telling you, I have the propensity to be either one every day. And boy, if I start feeding the miserable one, she'll take over fast, I'll tell you. Seriously, you know what? You have to learn how to feed yourself what you want. You know, you make your day.
It's actually kind of funny that you say that, because there's certain things Josh does that just drive me absolutely crazy. But over through doing this class, God has checked me in it, that he'll bring to mind, well, you do this, that annoys him, or your habit here annoys him. And he brings it up a lot, and it's really frustrating, because I want to, you know, say something, and I've actually stopped saying certain things, because God will be like, well, you do this, that annoys him.
Yeah, and you have to say every single thing that annoys you. My heavens, we'd be talking about it all day.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's all my conversations would be about my husband. Oh, hello, we want to tell you the other four things I just noticed. I mean, you know, because we're picky. And they have to deal with us, too. You're right, and I love that, too, because once you do that, it seems like there's not so much of your time picking on each other. And it's nice. It's way better. So you learn to give and take. You let people make a mistake. Live so you're missed when you're not there. I mean, my goodness, people are living so when people get divorced, they're like, well, I stop banging my head on the wall. That's the way people actually feel. It's easier to live without you than it is to live with you. That is poor. I mean, seriously. You don't have to be a big plus sign, but I used to tell my kids, look, you can be a zero. Don't add nothing, anything, and you're not adding anything. You can definitely not be a negative. You know, so, I mean, I would tell my kids, add something. Put something in. Make a difference if you're there. If you're home with your husband and a night, make it a better night because you're there. Think of a way. Doesn't have to be big. Think of some little ways. You know, sometimes we're waiting for this big thing. We're like, oh, yeah, I'm not in the mood to do anything big. We'll do some small stuff then. You know, sometimes just do something. It really doesn't take that long. Once you start getting different habits, it's really nice. Hear the heart behind the words. The things that people say come from inside of them. That goes for your husband, too. You know, hear what's inside of him. Evaluate. I love evaluate. Continuous improvement requires systematic and unfiltered evaluation. Evaluation is stepping back to look at the information that's going to give you feedback. Do you know what? Every single successful workplace. I love work principles because usually if it works at a workplace, it'll be really effective in a home. A lot of things people do at home, they'd never get away with it at work, you know, and it would never make for a good company, but they think it's going to make for a good home. No, it doesn't. But you know what? The thing is like if you step back and evaluate, see, the problem is at home we don't do this stuff. We're not going to look back and see, how's the teamwork? What's hurting these kids? What is this kid working on? You got kids, you go, wait, what's this one struggling with? What about this one? You're going to sit back and you're going to have a time where you're really evaluating, you're making a plan. Because when you make a plan, you're not just a piece of driftwood floating on the waves of the life. You're making a plan. You're seeing what your, you know, family needs. And then you're going to be able to go out and get it somewhere and start bringing things in that are going to support what they need. And it's so powerful. But it won't happen unless you evaluate it and you make a plan. So you're going to sit down, maybe in your Bible study time, you're going to be like, okay, I need to write down, what am I really hoping for each one of the people in my family? And how can I help them get there? You know, they might not ever know what you saw in them that was on that list that you started bringing in things to give them victory in those areas. They might never know that you even saw it in them. Because you don't need to tell them that. All you need to do is start bringing in, like if they need examples of forbearance, you can start demonstrating, pointing out, using as examples, doing your studies, reading your stories, depending on how old they are. You know what I mean? That's what I see when I'm dealing with my grandkids. Like, Susie the rabbit is dealing with whatever things she doesn't have a handle on, you know, and then you're giving them strength to get through the things. But there's a way to do that with your husband, too. You see that he's been more quiet. You see that he's been stressed out. You know what to bring to the situation to countervent that. You know what I mean? But you're not going to do it unless you evaluate. And it's always changing. So that's why it's good to keep going through some of this stuff, because you can evaluate and get a plan today. It's not working next year. You know what I mean? It's a different plan. So it's just really fun, but you have, and then you have to take an action plan. So take something, it's measurable steps of action. A lot of times, like, I'll be, you know, doing my action plan, and I'll just be like, okay, I'm just going to be more patient when that happens or something. That is not measurable. No, you got to take something that you can measure. No, when that happens, like, if you want to be more patient, you might say, when that happens, I'm just going to stop and think before I open my mouth. Now, that's measurable. You'll be able to know if you stop and think before you open your mouth. You'll know if you're able to okay, I'm going to consider what outcome I want before I start doing things and saying things that are going to undermine that. Now, I can measure that. I can't measure I'm going to be more patient. Like, that's not going to come. That's not, does not cut it on the action plan. So the action plan is something where you need to really, you know, come up with stuff.
Karen, that as for teachers, we have to have come up with a professional growth plan every year and set goals or whatever, so we have a new principal. And he was kind of honest with, like, these goals that we were doing before were fine, but it was like, no, it has to be measurable. And I found that all that it was, like, we're all freaking out about it. Well, what is he talking about? That you just give it a number.
Yeah.
I'm going to do three of these types of lessons, or four, so even just giving yourself a number.
I like that.
I'm going to say, do this like four times.
Right.
Or whatever.
Like, right, I'm going to give affirmation statements four times to my husband. Yeah, that's awesome. I like that. And then it's so important at work that you have to do that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're not going to, and you probably do a lot of evaluating too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Kids, yeah. But, you know, it's cool because I never thought about doing that with my own. And it's almost like, gosh, I wish I would. You know, it's just one of those things like, oh,
yeah,
I should have been doing that at home. You
know
what I mean?
And it really helps. Yeah. But believe me, my kids are married, still up to you. So. They're still in your life. You still see things. You still could be a part. You know what I mean? So, okay, but we want to also remember, oh my gosh, this is so important, you guys. You remember where you've come from with this person, you know? Think back. Talk about where you came from. You know, build on it. Appreciate it. Maybe not some of the tough stuff, but, you know, I like the fact that I've been with my husband a really long time. You know, it's just really cool. We've gone through a lot together, you know, ups and downs, you know. And I love that, you know, when I hear people will say, who was just writing? I just read it. All these things I've been through. So, oh, it's on Facebook. People say, we've been through the ups and downs of life together, and, you know, I still do, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, and, you know, one girl just posted, one of my friends, and I know they've been through some tough times together, but they made it. It's just so nice that they went through all those things together. So really appreciate the history you have with people. Because you know what? When you chuck it, people chuck it and start over. You're starting with day one. I'm like, do you realize how many years you're going to have to get to before you even have the possibility of repeating what relationship you have? I mean, it's a lot. You know, you're going to be so old, you're not going to be able to do it. But seriously, it's like people just think you can't just replace somebody like that. But, and also, when you're going through challenges together, learn to step out and bring those words to live by and hear those words to live by. If you are going through a challenge, if you are challenging yourself, you know, there's been times when I told my kids, you know what? I've been really slacking. I got to start really working on this whole thing. So I need to say sorry, and I'm cracking down. You know, but there's times that I'll say what I'm working on to my family. I don't have a problem with that. Or, you know, I'm really sorry. I've been so impatient lately. I really don't want to be like that. step out and start bringing those words that are going to show people and help them to go through the challenges with you. Like, you know, even when my husband will go through time, he'll be like, oh, I'm going to be doing this at work. So I know for this time, I'm heads down. You know, I can't be there for other things. You know, I'm really sorry. Okay, now I know what to expect. You know what I mean? It helps get through those stuff, those things. But also time. Relationships take a lot of time. You know, if you and your spouse have drifted apart, you probably haven't spent the time on it. You know what I mean? You got to spend time, and it's got to be regular time. Just like that plot in the back. If you don't work on it, you can't just go out and it's the same. Weeds and stuff will drift in. So it's got to be a daily thing. Doesn't, you know, seriously, we are so busy. No excuses, but don't underestimate the value of a minute. You know, really, if you only have very limited time, then use your time wisely. You know what I mean? Make those minutes count. You can do it. You're a woman. You're strong. We know how to do stuff like that. When you really focus on it, you can have ideas that what you could do and how you can, you know, make that, you know, communication more than just like what people communicate. I remember when I was really young when that movie, that divorce movie, Kramer versus Kramer, came out. And I don't even remember that much about the movie. But I do remember when it was Dustin Hoffman and somebody else. And they had come in and they were just like, hi, what do you love? Their sentences were so nothing. It was just like, why talk? And we all have those conversations. What's for dinner? Blah, blah, blah. How was your day? You know, kind of normal routine communication. But you know what? Take the time and try to be a little inventive in your communication to find out some information or give some information that you normally wouldn't give to the grocery store attendant. You know what I mean? So make your communication more meaningful. I mean, you know, this is the guy, the only guy you're intimate with. You know, make it a little more intimate than something that you could say to any stranger that you stop on the street, you know. So you want to get in. I remember that. I thought, oh, that conversation, I hope I'm never into that. And sometimes we all get into it. But, you know, ask a different question, something that is more information. If you don't have more information than how was your day, then why didn't you know what he was doing that day? So you didn't. Why didn't you have more information? You didn't do your job yesterday. So start today. And say, what are you doing tomorrow? Do you have meetings? You know, are you flying here? You're doing this? Find out what their day is going to be so that the next day when they come home, it's not just how was your day. How'd that meeting with your boss go? You know, how is that situation turning around? You know, if you're not able to get to the next level, you probably haven't asked enough questions to get there. So the how was your day is all you're going to get, then you've got to pay attention. But a lot of times you don't know how to communicate. People don't know how. A lot of times companies will have their employees go to communication classes because it's really important, you know. You've got to be able to communicate. A lot of times you can know stuff, but if you don't know how to communicate it to somebody, it's failure, right? But or you could be afraid. A lot of times you might feel like somebody would reject the way you feel or not care about the way you feel. So a lot of times people are concerned about that. Sometimes, and I think a lot of times, it's just way too much trouble. It's time consuming. It has a lot of effort, and it's just a lot. But you have to take time to communicate. And I mean, let's face it, sometimes we're communicating with a wall. So, I mean, that's not easy either. So sometimes you're communicating with somebody who's like reading their phone. Like I do, or they could be playing a game on the computer.
Notes are on my phone.
Right. See, the notes is one thing, but when you're talking to a lot of men, like my husband, he'll be sitting there doing emails when I'm talking to him. Or my kids will be playing their games, you know, when I'm talking to them. So sometimes it's hard to have meaningful communication when you're standing there by yourself, technically. but there are times. You know, when I'm going to go out with my husband, I'll actually say to him, I'll say, you know what, I can either stay here and do stuff, or I can go to eat with you. He always likes to go eat. I hate going out to eat. It takes too much time at the restaurant and everything. So I'll be like, but I'll go with you, because he doesn't like to go alone. I said, but you got to leave your phone down and really talk to me. So, and then he will, you know, but I'll say that, but you know, other times, you know, I understand that he's getting 600 emails a day, so I really understand, and I really don't have a problem, usually, you know, but there are those times when I really just want to talk. So, you know, I mean, plan the times, but when you are talking, make your communication meaningful. When he calls from Germany, I'm asking him, you know, important questions that he wouldn't have anybody else asked him. You want to get that little edge with your honey. You know what I mean? You want to ask him the questions no one else is asking him. You want to know about him more than, you know, than you'd ask the guy at the supermarket. You know what I mean? So make sure that your communication is going to the next level. Self-esteem is low. Do you think it will change anything? Oh, I put a note. I'm trying to wipe it off. I thought it was a hair. It was a circle. But listening, I think, like it says, to be a ready listener. First of all, if you're going to be a good communicator, you have to really listen. You not only have to listen to words, and we can all do this. We can all look behind the words. See why someone is saying the things that they're saying. A lot of times the words aren't it. Oh, you guys, I hope everyone knows you can grab water in the fridge, too. But don't forget. Always. So, sometimes I just don't think of that stuff. But I just realized that, you know, I didn't tell you again. But anyways, you have to listen carefully and concentrate. It's accepting what someone's saying, even though you don't agree with it. You can learn to listen to where someone's coming from. You might not agree with it. Then guess what? You go back to evaluate and make an action plan. You can find out how you can have solution-based communication to get yourself on a different playing field, or maybe to bring another aspect of that thing that you don't agree with, maybe at a different time when you're not just trying to listen and understand. Maybe at a different time you could bring in your part and you can come to a different conclusion together. But you know what? Sometimes it's just time to listen. It's not time to make a point. You know, sometimes it's just time to file it away for your evaluation and action plan. So we have to just be careful that we really listen. That doesn't mean like listen so that you can say your thing when they're stopped talking. Because if they're doing that and you're doing that, no one's really listening. You know, so you got to really listen, maybe repeat back what you think they said. So do you really believe, so blah, blah, blah. Honestly, this is such an effective way to handle problems. I've had so many problems, even like I might get maybe concerned about maybe one of my kids, like maybe think that they're going after something that's wrong or doing something inappropriate or doing something that's dangerous or that they haven't thought about. Or, you know, I have my husband where he'll be making some decisions that he's going to take the boys and stuff like that. You know what the best way to, like, really find out where someone's coming from without saying, you know, I just feel like that person, every time you're with that person, blah, blah, blah. You know, it puts people on the defense so fast. I think the best way is just ask questions. Like, if you ask the right questions, and you can say to them, you know, I just want to know, like, what are you trying to get out this weekend with the boys? Like, what's your focus? You know, and trying to get my husband, like, he can take the boys to the Final Four every year, which is fine. And yet, if I ask him a few questions like that, it will totally change the focus of my husband's even weekend. I'll say, you know, you got those time with the boys, really want to use it to pour into their lives, like, what do you want to come away from the weekend with? And I'll challenge him to do differently than they might have originally planned, you know? But I think, too, if you're not agreeing with somebody, sometimes it is really good to find out what their perspective is and then just to give it some time for you to make a plan where you can make a way that you can bring your perspective to it if you really do need a change in that, you know? But I think sometimes we're not even listening. And so rather than them listening, we start talking against what they're saying. So then they're on the defense and we never get anywhere. So do you see what I'm saying? If you listen, and just try to understand their perspective and then just go, okay, no, that's good to know. I just wanted to know where you were coming from. I need to just think about this. Yeah, that's okay. You know, you might ask a few more questions. Like, wow, okay. That's your perspective. And you're allowed your perspective. God gives you your free will, you get a free will. So I'm not taking it from him. You know? And then maybe another time bring back what you have to say. That will teach your husband and other people that you're not just interested in your own agenda all the time. And then they'll trust you to share their heart, not thinking you're going to jump all down their throat before they're even done. And then you'll get a chance to say your thing another time. When it's their turn to listen, they'll be a little better at it if you've kind of demonstrated it, you know? I think it's really powerful. But plan a time that's good for your husband and speak the truth in love. You know, I think a lot of times we can say stuff that's true, but it's not in love. And if you say it, I don't care how true it is, if you don't say it in love, it's not going to be received. Also, be sensitive to the other person's feelings. I don't want to go over. Okay. Don't let me go over my thing. Carried away. Also, allow for reaction time. Like, seriously, it amazes me. So many times when I'm trying to help someone with the communication thing, they'll be like, oh, they were so mad when I told them we're not going to their party, or when I told them that I'm not doing their work event and don't want them to go to the work event. I said, but what did you expect them to be? Sometimes you have to realize, when you're saying no to somebody or they're letting them down in some area, you can't, like, expect them to be really happy. Like, you know, you should have a fair idea of when somebody is not going to be happy with what you're saying. So don't expect them to be. Like, give them a break. Of course they're not going to be happy. You know, yeah, I know, this is really hard. I'm really sorry. We have to change the plans. I can't do this, and I know I said I was gonna. I can't expect them to be happy, you know? So give them some reaction time. Yeah, I'm really sorry. I know you're really bummed out. I wish I could change this, but, you know, blah, 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 da, da, da. But whatever, you've got to give somebody a chance to digest, you know, situations that aren't going their way. So a lot of times I think that reasonable communication realizes that sometimes someone needs some time to change their thought patterns, or, you know, so just be patient. Don't defend yourself. Just give somebody a chance to take it in. Say, well, just think about it. We could even talk about it another time if you want. But I think a lot of times it's just that you're not giving somebody a time to change their mind. I know sometimes when things cut across what I'm doing or what I'm thinking, I need time to readjust. You know what I mean? Also, a good communicator knows that tone of voice influences the message. The way you say something, you know, can totally change the meaning. So you've got to realize that you're not only the way you say something, you could be rolling your eyes. You could have your hands on your hips. You could be like facing up. You could be, there's so many things that you do that can even speak louder than your words. It says that tone in, where's that? Oh, it says that the nonverbal is 55%. Your verbal communication is only 7%. Your tone is 38%. That's from a communications expert. So really, your nonverbal, the way you're, you know, coming up, is going to be way more important than what you're saying. So if, when you realize that, if you want to, like, communicate more effectively, watch your body language and watch your tone. Sometimes, too, I can be like a machine gun because I am in a hurry a lot of times and I get a little hyper. So if I'm like talking about something, I'm going like, yeah, what? Okay, you know. And so really, that's not a good communication style when you're handling tough stuff. So I need to learn to totally change my style. Actually, I get hyped up, so I have to learn when I'm really talking about something that could be a tough situation. I have to slow down. I have to, you know, peace out a little bit. You know, maybe have a little, I call it the pregnant pause before I start talking again. Give a little extra thing, maybe pare it back, because I can tend to go on overdrive and just run everybody over. That was funny what Mike said. He goes, what did he say?
That was funny.
He goes, you know, some people do speed reading. He goes, I have to do speed listening.
Yeah.
Yes. Between my wife and her sister.
He goes, the rest of you people are all talking in slow motion.
He says, we like, bup, 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 bup. But you know, you have to realize how you're coming up because that can really put someone on edge if you're bringing up something that is a tough thing and they have to kind of, you know, cogitate it a little bit. Like they're going to have to think about it as you're saying it. You can't be giving your information 130 words a minute, you know. So you do have to realize what you're saying and know that that nonverbal, that tone, the way you're saying it, how you're saying it, when you, whether you're running out the door, and address your tough stuff to the right situation. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to be able to go into all this other stuff because I think I was getting into that other stuff at the beginning that I wanted to tell you about. But don't add fuel to the back. Oh, concentrate on listening. Don't add fuel to the fire by backbiting and not keep to the issue at hand. I like to say, if you link, you sink. Because you don't link past situations to the situation you're talking about. Like, seriously, you've got to handle something so that it is, can be solved. And if you start saying, now in 19, you know, 98, when you blah, 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 well, they can't solve that. So now you've just gone to the area of total frustration and total turnoff. So you really want to, you know, make sure. Don't put the other person on the defense. And remember, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. And fuel solutions, not problems. You really want to make sure that when you're talking about something that, you know, think to yourself, what do I want to get out of this conversation? If you can't get a solution out of the conversation, don't have it. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, if you're not going to get a solution out and it's just going to bring up hostilities, I wouldn't have the conversation. Like, if seriously, if maybe, say, for example, we agreed on a time to leave, and then we went to some party, and then, not that this ever happened, and then, and then, you know, he decides to, like, forget the time we're supposed to leave, and then you're looking for him, and it's nowhere to be found, and so you get home an hour later, and you had reasons to be home, or whatever. You know, you can't really change that. Like, there's not one thing that you can do. I mean, you might have gone and got them, you know, blah, 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 that you might be very terse and aggravated, which is more reason not to talk about it right then. So then the next time I go to a thing, that's when I'll talk about it. Because guess what? Now it can change something. You say, you know, that last thing, you know, now I'm not aggravated, way better time to talk, right? You can have a solution, way better time to talk. So I'll say, you know, last time that really messed me up, you know, I just want to make sure that we connect at blah, blah, blah time, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's way better. I think a lot of times we don't realize it. We'll get in the car and be like, meh. You know, you're all irritated, you're aggravated. There's just definitely, you're not going to get anything out of it except for negativity, bad feelings, probably a bad night, and probably even a bad next day, really, because it's going to totally negate any fun you had at the beginning of the night. So really, be smart, you know? So, also three communication killers. Silence is not golden. Do not, like, give anyone the silent treatment. I knew people that didn't talk to each other for a long time because they were mad, stupid. Explosion, not good. And tears, ineffective. I'm sorry, tears make you scary looking. I always say, when you're crying, look in the mirror and see if you would like that coming at you. I mean, really, I mean, it just, guys just shut down when you cry. So really, if you're crying, just kind of try, if it's really emotional, and just try not to look really scary, when, you know, because like when you're kind of like, and you look at yourself, and the poor guy, I mean, he's just going to go along with anything just to walk out, walk you up. So I just say, try to avoid those three communication busters, you know. And it really, if you're really that emotional about it, probably isn't a great time to talk about it. You know what I mean? So, well, it's awesome. Let's just close in prayer. Lord, thanks for this time. We looked at two wrong lessons, but they were good lessons. But we did look at all these communication things and changing, and that we really want it to be a work of heart. And Lord, help us to go out of here changed and different, and help these lessons to come back at us, Lord. We don't want to just hear about all these tools. These are such awesome tools. And if we start really applying them, it will revolutionize our relationships. Just help us to make more of a difference where we go, and help us to say words that matter, hear words that matter, pull things from people. Help us to really be amazing wives that can really utilize and bring the best out of our relationships and see the potential in our husbands. Help us to really live in a way so that it will maximize our days and our lives, Lord. And we just give you thanks and praise for it. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Yes, good. Do your homework. Let me tell you what we'll do for homework. And then next week, we'll go back to lessons, the fifth lesson, which is, we did 9 and 10, so it'll be...